I listen to the diaries because it sparks ideas for new adventures. Whether it is an episode about an epic adventure or a backyard micro-adventure, I start thinking about my next adventure. I'm inspired by the people and their stories to go a little farther and dig a little deeper. If you want to add more spark to your adventurous ideas, consider subscribing to the Diaries Plus today. I'm Crystal, a longtime listener from the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains in North Carolina.
Thanks to everyone who has subscribed to the Diaries Plus. It's been awesome, and you're powering the show as we move into the future. If you're interested in subscribing today, there's a link in the show notes. Please join. Now, on to the show. Lauren, you just got back from a trip. Where'd you go?
Yeah, I did a kind of smash and grab trip back east for the weekend to North Carolina to see my mom for her birthday, which was really awesome. It was a little bit of a whirlwind, but we went to the beach. We watched a lot of basketball. And when I was leaving, we talked about how relieved she was to have a pretty relaxing weekend, because usually our trips together involve me making her do stuff that's outside of her comfort zone.
Like what? What has she been game to try?
Well, the ones that come to mind, first is a trip to Yosemite. She came and visited me when I was working out there, and I got her to hike up to Vernal Falls, and it was a big hike for her. And then when I got married, we took our parents out to Delicate Arch near Moab, and I think that was one of the coolest places I've dragged her to.
I think it's so interesting because I think there's that instinct when you're younger and you're like, this is the really important thing in my life, to share that with your parents. And, you know, my family, growing up, we were not outdoors at all. And I remember when I discovered climbing at 18 years old, and it just, you know, obviously it changed the course of my life. At some point, probably a year or so later, 2 years later, being with my mom and my brother in Southern California, and you know, of course, I was like, I gotta go climbing, freaking out. And I did it, and then I found this boulder. And I was like, oh, mom, I'm gonna show you what I do. And I was like, so intent. I was like, this is gonna be amazing, you know? And so I drag her out to this boulder. And she's kind of like, okay, we're like here. It's like, it's a beautiful view. It doesn't really register. And I'm like, this is amazing, mom. Look at this. Look at me climb. And she's just like, can we go now? and it was so funny because there was just this disconnect where, you know, it made so much sense to me and it made zero sense to her. And I think, you know, through time, she obviously understood this was more than a phase in my life. And it was funny because the opposite side of that story is that much later, 20 years later, when she found out like climbing was going to be in the Olympics, she's like, oh, are you going to go? Are you going to go represent the U.S.? And I'm like, I think that ship sailed, mom. You know, like 40-year-old Fitz is not going to be representing the U.S. in the Olympics ever, nor was 20-year-old Fitz. So, yeah, it's cool to see that she's kind of come to understand this big part of my life and what makes me tick.
For me, I think it was kind of the same. Like, I'd been telling my parents, you know, calling home and talking about all these adventures that was going on, but I think something really clicked for them when they came out to Yosemite and we walked to the base of El Cap, and, you know, they really got to see it through my eyes. And yeah, in a way where I feel like I couldn't just convey with telling them about it over the phone. It took taking them there for them to really connect with why I was out doing all sorts of crazy stuff.
So today, I mean, we've got a story today that is both a crazy adventure, but also a sort of reunion of sorts. What are we talking about today?
Today, we present Homecoming, a story about shared joy, dreaming big, and really redefining what it means to belong in the outdoors.
And we're going to do something special again. What are we up to?
Yeah, we did this a few months ago, and we're really excited to do it again. And thanks to Vanessa Chavarriaga Posada, who's telling her story today, and producer Laura Isaza, this episode is also available in Spanish.
So you might see the story twice in your feed. If one's in the language you don't want, check out the other one. I'm Fitz Cajal.
I'm Lauren Delaney Miller.
And you're listening to the Dirtbag Diaries.
My name is Vanessa Chavarriaga Posada. I am a Colombian immigrant currently living in Jackson, Wyoming. So I live in a town full of ski mountaineers, and you kind of have this checklist of things you do, places you visit, mountains you climb.
In October of 2022, Vanessa checked a big ticket item off of that list.
Pico de Orizaba is on that list for most ski mountaineers. It is a really good, I think, entry level mountain to high altitude ski mountaineering without being super technical. It's the tallest mountain in Mexico, and it actually took one of my really good friends and ski mentor Sophia Schwartz to extend an invitation, because skiing Pico de Orizaba was not something I knew I was capable of doing until I was literally doing it. And I think that's the beautiful thing about mentors, is sometimes they see your strength in spaces where you can't see it yet.
Vanessa had seen other skiers do the typical weekend smash and grab trip to Pico de Orizaba, and to her and Sophia, it felt extractive. The highest peak in Mexico is sacred to many of the communities that surround it. So when the time came to plan their own expedition, instead of just taking something from the mountain, she and Sophia wanted to find a way to make the trip a shared, thoughtful experience.
We were like, okay, but how do we do it different? And I said, well, can I bring my parents with me?
Not many 25-year-olds dream of taking their parents on a ski trip with them. But for Vanessa, this was an invaluable opportunity to connect with her family on a different level, and to heal the parts of herself that have so often felt irreconcilable.
I immigrated from Colombia when I was 6 years old, and we immigrated from like the warm, eternal summer of Colombia to like the frigid gray winter of Michigan, and just had like no idea what to do.
Growing up in Michigan, Vanessa watched as many of her friends and neighbors went on weekend trips to take advantage of all the snow, while she and her family stayed home.
My relationship to the outdoors growing up was pretty non-existent. Growing up in an immigrant household, I was expected to produce and create things just in order to get by, right? The big pressure was definitely on like books and school and the violin and the piano, so I never went outside. My parents never really saw the value in like putting me in like the volleyball team or the baseball, whatever. You know, I grew up as this like kind of awkward nerdy kid who just like read a bunch of books and stayed inside, and like, you know, I created these magical spaces in my own head while the snow fell outside in Michigan and all my counterparts were going skiing. And a second part of why I didn't have access is because I grew up undocumented and I grew up without health insurance. And that was a huge, huge barrier, because my parents told me I wasn't allowed to get hurt, and so I wasn't allowed to go outside, right? Like, I remember one time I tried to join the tennis team at my high school, and I needed to get like a physical exam to show them. And even just getting an exam took like 4 weeks, and I had to sit on the bleachers for the entire season because I didn't have access to healthcare. And so I think, yeah, I think all of those reasons just like very quickly cemented in my head that like the outdoors wasn't for me. And I was fine with it for a long time. Like, I didn't even know what I was missing, right? Like, I just kept reading my books and studying hard and just trying to be the best student I could be to succeed in this world and follow the American dream.
Then, in high school, two things happened that fundamentally changed the course of Vanessa's life. First was a summer camp in the Tetons.
That was like a super formative experience because it was my first time climbing and camping and backpacking and doing all these things, and just completely fell in love with those specific mountains. And so I kind of made a promise to myself that I would find my way back here one way or another.
And second was the uprooting of her family system.
My dad was deported when I was 15 years old, and I mean, that hit me like a truck. You know, it was incredibly difficult for a 15-year-old to figure out like what was happening and why their father was being taken away.
Vanessa's family had left Colombia because they worried about their safety, and a decade later, those concerns hadn't gone away. So instead of returning home, her dad went to Mexico. Vanessa is an only child, and her mom stayed with her until she graduated from high school. Then, she went to Mexico too. Though she didn't know it at the time, this is the moment where Vanessa began to feel stretched in two, drawn to the mountains of Wyoming on one side, and pulled to be with her family in Mexico on the other.
It just created like even more pressure for me to succeed.
For as long as she could remember, Vanessa believed that the path to success in the United States relied on education, and so she poured herself into her college applications.
Part of being undocumented also meant that I couldn't get in-state tuition anywhere, and I couldn't get any federal loans.
Without access to financial aid, Vanessa had been hoping to attend college on a scholarship for low-income students. She made it to the final round, but in the end, she didn't get it.
And it became this moment where, like, I realized that the bubble of meritocracy that I grew up in, this idea that, like, if I worked hard, I would be a good person, it, like, popped. Because I was like, I'm following this formula. Why didn't it work? It was hard because it was, like, a perfect example of, like, literal sacrifices that they had given for me to have this life. And I could see it, right? Like, they weren't even allowed to be in this country anymore. And they were telling me, like, you have to keep going. You have to go to college here. Like, yeah, I think I rejected that pretty hard because I didn't want to be alone. And I was like, no, I'm coming to Mexico to live with you guys because I would rather have this, like, less great education and opportunity than, like, be completely by myself in this country.
For 2 years, Vanessa attended university in Monterrey, Mexico. In that time, she applied to adjust her immigration status in the U.S., and she started dreaming of returning to the mountains of the American West. In 2019, she transferred to the University of Wyoming in Laramie. It wasn't Jackson, but it was a big step closer. In Laramie, she could trail run, hike, and backpack, all out her back door.
I was having a great time outside in the summer. I love scrambling and trail running and climbing mountains, but I could only go outside for half of the year. And so I started getting really frustrated and just said, like, there has to be a way.
Vanessa tried to keep trail running through the snowy Wyoming winters, but when that reached its limit, she learned to skate ski. She loved being able to get outside in the snow, but she really wanted to find a way to be deep in the wilderness, not just on groomed Nordic trails. Vanessa had never downhill skied before, in part because she had associated the sport with wealthy vacationers.
I was pretty turned off from skiing all of my life because, one, like, nobody who looked like me did it, none of my family members did it, it was so expensive, but I think primarily the culture of the ski resort itself. It's just like this very white, toxic masculinity culture, and I just avoided that for as long as I could. I think the reason that skiing changed for me was because I learned that backcountry skiing was a thing. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I can walk uphill in, like, this solitude and admire, like, the snowflakes, and it doesn't have to be this, like, fast, unhealthy culture that I had familiarized with skiing.
When friends from school offered to teach her, she jumped at the chance.
So I rented a backcountry setup from my university and went up a mountain in Grand Teton National Park. And that day just, like, totally blew my mind open of, like, oh, this is a possibility. I could still be in the mountains in the middle of the winter. And I think something about that was so alluring because it was so far away from, like, anything I had ever imagined myself doing or any of my family members doing. And so it became this thing that I wanted to chase.
Vanessa's drive towards skiing was all about the backcountry, but she quickly realized that touring was not the most efficient way to learn how to get downhill on skis. Some friends took her to nearby Snowy Range ski area, and they gave her pointers. And over the course of the season, she made her way from greens to blues to blacks. After graduating in 2020, she finally made the move to Jackson. Intimidated by what she anticipated would be a white, affluent ski town, she started building her community before she even arrived. She reached out to BIPOC skiers on social media and put together a summer meetup. That's how she met Sophia Schwartz and Juliana Garcia. They mentored her and became the perfect accomplices for her ambitions in the bigger mountains. But no matter how much she loved her adventures, something was missing. As Vanessa was falling in love with the mountains and the way she could explore them on skis, she started noticing a disconnect when she tried to convey this to her parents.
You know, they've always been supportive, but they've never understood. And so, like, having them experience the things that I do, even in little slices, just makes us and our connection a lot closer. This, like, classic situation happens where it's like you're a little kid and you, like, just learned how to do, like, a front flip on a trampoline, and you, more than anything, you just want your parents to see it, right? You're like, Mom and Dad, look at what I learned. That's how I feel all the time when I'm outdoors.
Skiing made Vanessa feel free and joyful, but it also made her feel like a different person than the one her parents knew.
Yeah, I am like participating in these sports that most of my family has no idea what they are, right? Like most of my family has never seen snow, let alone a pair of skis. And same with the outdoor community who can't even fathom a life without outdoor access. And so I'm holding these two things and I'm existing between them. Something that I remind myself a lot is me existing in skiing as a woman of color, as an immigrant, is a pretty new thing, right? Like I exist in this duality of being Colombian, but also being American, even though I might not have citizenship. Like I think a lot of us kids who exist on the margins see ourselves as bridges, you know, because I think like from a young age, we have to translate things for our parents, or we have to explain to our friends why we're eating this type of food or celebrating this type of holiday. And in that way, our capacity to hold two worlds, at some points it feels like it's a burden, but I think it's really a gift once we know what to do with it. My parents can't come to the US because they don't have visas. And so for the most part, all of my expeditions exist in a space that they legally can't be in.
Vanessa's parents couldn't just hop on a plane to Jackson and go skiing with her. But what if she could bring the expedition to them?
I called my mom and told her the idea when it was still like very half-baked and we were just like running off of excitement. She has this like childlike joy about her and curiosity that she just immediately said yes. You know, it was super exciting for her, I think, to have an opportunity to glance into my world and share it with me.
When we get back, Vanessa heads to Mexico.
Support for the Diaries comes from Ketone IQ. As I've been getting more and more into longer runs and bike rides, I found myself fighting with my mind. As the miles extend, I feel like my reactions get slower and I make more mistakes, like tripping or falling or just kind of feeling slightly out of sync descending on the bike. On those big days, I've been using Ketone IQ to help my brain keep fueled and sharp. I want to have fun, not bonk. Here's the science. Ketones already exist in your body. When you push up against your boundaries, your body begins to convert stored fat into ketones, which your brain prefers consuming. With Ketone IQ, I feed my brain so my muscles can use the glucose I get from whatever else I eat on the trail. Riders of the Tour de France have been taking the same approach. I am definitely not as fast, but I can apply the same thinking. Give it a try. You save 30% off your first subscription order at ketone.com/dirtbagdiaries. Once again, that's ketone.com/dirtbagdiaries. The link is in the show notes. Please check it out. Support comes from Kuat Racks. The Piston SR is a single rail bike rack that easily mounts on most roof racks, overlanding utility racks, and truck bed rack systems. The dual ratcheting piston arm grabs your tires and makes no contact with the bike frame. So that's better for your bike, right? Plus, the rack has an all-metal construction, genuine Kashima coat, and integrated cable locks. That translates to being super burly. Kuat has taken their Piston Pro X and elevated it. Find more details at kuat.com. Kuat, because you will absolutely love this rack.
Pico de Orizaba sits 18,491 feet above sea level, making it one of the most prominent volcanoes in the world. Vanessa explained to me that the mountain's glaciers don't reach the summit anymore. And so these days, skiers must rely on snow accumulated in Mexico's wet summer season to make it skiable. It was May when Vanessa and Sofia hatched the idea for Pico de Orizaba, which gave them 6 months to plan their trip for the end of October.
We met once a week, every week, and just sat down and talked about logistics because, yeah, I think you're talking about an expedition. Like, we know what to bring for skiing, right? But also, what do we bring for our families? Like, my mom didn't have a sleeping bag. So, like, what all do we have to bring to create access for more people? And it's definitely more of an effort on our end, but definitely pays off at the same time.
They quickly solidified the team of eight. There would be three skiers, Vanessa, Sofia, and Juliana. With Sofia's background as a professional skier and Juliana's experience as an internationally accredited mountain guide, Vanessa knew she'd be in good hands. On the community side would be Vanessa's parents, Maria and Juan, family friends Diana and Mary Paz, and photographer and friend of Juliana's, Esteban. Vanessa would be the liaison between the Wyoming faction and the Mexico faction, which meant frequent check-ins with her mom.
She was calling me every week asking me, like, what can I do? Have you booked the hotel? Like, do we need cars? You know, like, all these different things. And so she was a super eager participant. I think my dad was a little more reluctant because he definitely likes being indoors, which is something that, like, a lot of, you know, like, immigrant families face, is, like, a lot of our parents, like, worked outdoors for a long time, and their relationship to the outdoors is labor, not leisure. And so inviting them outdoors sometimes has to look different, right?
Vanessa knew that she couldn't just bring her parents into a totally unfamiliar landscape and expect them to be comfortable. She needed to adapt the trip to meet them where they were.
Taking your parents into the backcountry is a whole, comes with its own set of risks, right? I'm like, okay, is there like a helicopter that could come get us? Like, what is the exit strategy? Like, who has the first aid kit? Has everyone been wearing enough layers and eating enough food? And so I'm definitely like holding all of that space of risk assessment in my head. And I think it's something that like we have to be willing to take on. But again, like I feel so privileged to have access to the outdoors and have this experience, right? And so in a way, like when I acquire experiences and when I learn new things, I'm learning them so I can bring them back to my community. In this case, it was my parents.
She didn't just want her family to tag along. She wanted them to feel like they belonged. So instead of driving straight from Mexico City to base camp at 14,000 feet, they would build in time to acclimatize along the way. Vanessa planned delicious meals and made sure everyone had the gear they would need, from sleeping bags to appropriate layers. Plus, they wanted to move slowly, to spend more time in the landscape and with each other.
Absolutely. Like, I could have planned a weekend trip with Sophia. We could have been in and out of Mexico City with, like, one ski bag and, like, you know, in a taxi and, like, have climbed this mountain overnight and gone back to the airport. It would be so much easier for me in any way to, like, just be a skier and push myself forward. And it's, quote-unquote, harder for me to bring people with me. But at the end of the day, my goal is different, right? My goals aren't based in individualism and individual success. They're built on collective and community joy and care. And so to meet that goal, I have to sit through some discomfort. And that's a privilege and a right in and of itself, right? I have the privilege of serving my community and bringing my skills and knowledge into a wider space. And yeah, it's hard, but like, what isn't hard, you know?
The 6 months of planning was both too much and not enough, Vanessa told me. Usually, she's a little more fly by the seat of her pants on ski trips, but this time, she wanted to plan methodically. Not only was she responsible for her parents' enjoyment, she was also preparing to ski the biggest objective she'd ever attempted, with only 3 seasons of skiing under her belt. On day one, the team all flew into Mexico City and met at the airport.
The first day of our trip was pretty much how all first days go for me, which is like I came into it completely overworked and overwhelmed.
Vanessa had been holding a lot of stress in the months leading up to this trip. She'd been busy with work, and she was coming straight from the screening of her first ski film. She was exhausted.
There's a picture of me yawning at the airport, and that's like what the whole day represents. Like, I was just like so tired and so, yeah, I think really stressed and really nervous about, okay, I'm coming into this trip like already at like 50, 60%, and I'm gonna have to hold space for everybody and do all of this like emotional labor, like physical labor, logistical labor, everything. And you know, we arrived at the airport and we were like, okay, we gotta go get the rental cars. And there was a problem with the rental cars. So like right away, we just hit this wall and I just started freaking out internally. Like my anxiety just went through the roof of like, oh no, like this whole thing is gonna be a failure. Like I bit off more than I could chew and this is the moment where everything falls apart and we haven't even left the airport.
Vanessa's dad argued with the rental car agency for 2 hours. He finally got things sorted. But the next challenge came in trying to jam all of their gear and equipment into their medium-sized car.
And so here I am, like, thinking again, like, okay, we got past the first part, but now we have to do this, and it's already getting late, and, like, everyone wants dinner, and, you know, just holding all of these things in my head. And then something really magical started to happen where I kind of let go of control a little bit, and I began to see how everybody could actually contribute to this space. And, you know, like, my mom, like, made friends with someone at the airport and, like, found out where to go for dinner. And, like, my friend Sophia did an awesome job packing the car, like Tetris style packing the car. It was incredible. And I just sat back and, like, stared at it for a little bit and just had this moment of comfort knowing that, like, oh, I don't have to do it all by myself. Like, I don't need to hold all of this space for all of these people because we're actually doing it together.
Vanessa had felt so responsible for everyone's experience that she'd forgotten to see her parents as contributing teammates.
Our view of, like, who is a good partner in the mountains is just so narrow because the pool we've been picking from historically has been incredibly narrow. And so when we expand it, we think of these skills of, like, yeah, like my mom being able to literally make friends with any stranger she finds is the coolest skill I have in a mountain partner. And, like, yeah, I think, like, my dad just, like, being able to feel joy and express himself, and Sophia being able to practice her Spanish and see parts of my world, like, all of that is amazing. And I think being the trip leader, you know, like, I was not the best skier, I was not the best climber, but I had all of these other skills that were seen and valued by everybody else. And I think that was also a really validating moment for me of, like, okay, here I am, like, adult learner, what am I trying to do? What are my goals? And it's like, oh, I don't have to be like them. I can be myself, and there's space for that here. And people value it and they appreciate it, and we can create really, really wonderful expeditions because of it.
The crew took their time driving from Mexico City to Orizaba. They let the 4-hour drive take 2 days as they stopped in small towns, did short day hikes, and took in the sights.
The whole trip was just so eclectic. Like, we stayed at a hotel that was just spooky themed. Like, I don't have any other description for it. And as soon as we walked in, there were all of these pictures that, like, if you looked at them sideways, they would turn into a skeleton. And there were, like, little caution tape on the walls and, like, you know, like, cobwebs and just, like, weird, funky things. And then we did an acclimatization hike up on Iztaccíhuatl, which is one of the taller mountains near Mexico City. And just got to go for a hike, which was really nice. And then, yeah, just kind of feeling things out, seeing how my parents are doing at elevation, and they did pretty well.
The first time seeing the objective is a special moment on any expedition. And as the team drove toward Pico de Orizaba, their excitement grew.
We're all feeling, like, kind of anxious about seeing the mountain for the first time, you know, because, yeah, we'd seen pictures, but none of us had seen it before in real life. And of course it was cloudy. And we just, like, couldn't see it. And we just, like, I kept feeling this, like, sleeping giant beneath these clouds. But it became even more elusive and intimidating because I couldn't actually see it.
The crew arrived at a hostel in the town of Orizaba, at the base of the mountain, where they could huddle up and prepare for the next leg of the journey. They planned to take 4x4 vehicles up to base camp at 14,000 feet, where they could set up camp and hike around.
I got to show my parents, like, this is what my ski looks like. This is the skin that I put on to climb uphill, because they, like, never understood what I said when I said I'm going uphill. I think it, like, it validated a lot of things for them of, like, oh, this is actually, like, a big thing that Vanessa's doing in her life, and the things that she's building are real, and it's not just some, like, ridiculous feat. Like, it actually means something.
At the hostel, Vanessa and the crew laid out all their gear. Sleeping bags, tents, cooking supplies, skis, boots, and crampons. She wanted to make sure everyone had what they needed. But as she checked and rechecked her kit, she realized how much her skiing world existed only in English.
When we're talking about true connection, language is incredibly important to me, and being able to speak Spanish in this space mattered a lot to me. One of my ongoing projects in life is just called skiing in Spanish because of exactly that reason, right? Like, I don't have words for skiing in Spanish. And that has been something that has always been hard for me, because when I go home and try to explain it to my family, like, I literally don't have the words. And so when my family arrived at the hostel and we kind of exploded all the gear and we're organizing everything, I was walking my parents through my ski setup. The really cool thing is that I had Juliana there, who is Ecuadorian but exists in the guide world. And so she's kind of the bridge of my two worlds as well. So I kind of kept looking over my shoulder to her for counsel of like, these are my skins. Juliana, how do you say skins in Spanish? And she was like, pieles. And I was like, got it. Estas son mis pieles.
Vanessa had been hoping this trip would help her find a way to bridge her Latina identity with her skier identity. And here, in a hostel in Orizaba, she was doing it. Soon, it was time to get some sleep. She had a big few days ahead of her still.
The sleeping was really funny because it was like a, you know, like bunk beds, hostel type room. And it was like with my mom and dad and all these different people in this hostel. And of course, like nobody slept well because we were all super nervous. And I don't know what it is about parents being like super early birds, but my dad wakes up before sunrise, like almost every day. So he woke up and like decided to walk around and he comes like running back in with a ton of energy. And he's like, Vane, you have to wake up. You have to go look outside.
Vanessa's dad, Juan, roused everyone from bed, and they all rushed to put on jackets and get outside.
Then we climbed to the roof of the hostel, and we see the mountain for the first time in this pink alpenglow from the sunrise. And that moment, we were all standing there on that roof together watching the sunrise, and it was just this really, really magical moment of, like, we've made it this far, you know? And, like, this in and of itself is a memory that all of us will hold for the rest of our lives, just sharing this beautiful sunrise together.
Standing there on the roof together, Vanessa felt ready to finally get on the mountain, and she knew everyone else did too.
You need these like 4x4 cars to like crawl up this terrible road for hours because you're going at 5 miles an hour, and you like crest these ridges and you're looking down at the valleys, and it's just this massive, massive landscape. Base camp is like a true alpine environment where there's nothing but rocks, you know? It's just like this huge, huge space where you're literally sitting on the shoulder of this giant mountain, and it's like one of the few times where you begin to understand like the grandeur of the space, you know? Because I think like when you look at it from far away, you're like, yeah, it's a mountain, it's big. But when you're like in it at 14,000 feet and there's like all of these clouds moving around you and like wind and cold and sun and like the combination of everything, it begins to feel really real. And it was really cool for my parents to experience that. My dad got to help me with the tent, and like just watching his smile as he was like trying something new was one of the best parts of the trip.
The entire team spent the day together, hiking around base camp and soaking in the views. Everyone had planned to spend the night there together, but Vanessa's dad decided he'd be more comfortable back at the hostel. As he headed down in the 4x4 rig, the rest of the team crawled into their tents. Vanessa's mom loved it so much, she wished she could continue on to the summit with them.
No one sleeps well at elevation, but apparently it was like the best night of sleep for her, I think just because it was such a fun and new experience. Seeing my parents do things for the first time and seeing them push themselves out of their comfort zone inspired me to climb this glacier and put my skis on and like drop into this icy death sheet, you know? And I think it was just like, yeah, seeing their bravery. Even though we weren't skiing together, like we were on this journey of growth together, which was really, really beautiful. It just made my joy and my strength so much more powerful because I come from a community-oriented culture, and my joy isn't real until it's shared.
When morning came, the women went on a short hike before the non-skiers headed back down to the hostel. Vanessa's parents had reached their high point at 14,000 feet, and now it was time for Vanessa to attempt to reach hers. Vanessa, Sofia, and Juliana went to sleep early, or tried to. At midnight, they strapped their skis to their packs and started uphill.
It was interesting to switch from being the guide to being the least experienced person, like in the span of 12 hours, you know? The nerves started to set in for sure after my family left, because then, like, it got real, right? I was like, oh, I'm actually here to ski. Like, my skis are right there. Like, my backpack is super heavy. Like, what am I gonna do? And all of a sudden, like, here I am feeling like the weakest link, or like I don't belong. And I sat them down and I was like, guys, like, I'm gonna be really slow and I don't think I'm gonna make it, you know? Like, I was like, kind of like fighting the tears, like they were like at my chest, of like all of this anxiety building up of like, I've never climbed anything that high. You know, like, I don't even know if my body will be capable of doing it. And my voice was starting to shake. And Juliana just, like, I remember she, like, looked me dead in the eye. And she was like, Vanessa, we are here for you. We are here for us. And we're going to do this together.
From their base camp, Vanessa, Sophia, and Juliana hiked to the toe of the glacier at around 16,000 feet. There, they switched out their hiking shoes for ski boots and crampons. It was too icy and steep to skin, so they carried their skis on their backs.
I remember I was putting on my crampons and, you know, still, like, in this wave of headlamps because it's pitch black. Like, it's the darkest dark you've ever seen in your entire life, and you're just like, is the sun ever going to rise again?
Vanessa, Juliana, and Sophia made their way up toward the summit of Pico de Orizaba. The higher they climbed, the steeper the route became.
For a moment there, I was, like, definitely in the pain cave, and, like, the snow was really frozen. It was super icy. I couldn't get my crampons to get, like, full grip on the ice, and when I got stuck, like, in these steeper sections, Juliana was able to put me on her rope, and it didn't feel bad to need help, you know, in that moment. It was like, okay, this is your area of strength. It's not mine, but that doesn't mean I'm weak. It just means that I have strength in other areas. And so feeling Juliana's tug of the rope just, like, encouraged me to keep going, like, one more step, one more step, one more step.
As the team reached the rim of the crater, they knew the summit was close.
And the sun is just starting to rise, and it's just, like, this beautiful, magical, glowing moment. And I just want to stop there and, like, collapse into a puddle of tears. But they egg me on, and I'm feeling the rope continuing to move. So I'm like, oh, right, step, step, step. We reach the summit right in time for the sunrise, which creates, like, this perfect cone shadow of the volcano because everything around it is flat forever. Yeah, I was just sobbing the entire time. I have a phrase in Spanish that I like to call myself, which is chingona pero chillona, which essentially means, like, I'm a badass, but I'm going to cry the whole time.
Standing on the summit of Pico de Orizaba, Vanessa knew there was only one thing left to do.
It was, like, this really, really emotional, beautiful experience because it was one of the hardest things I'd ever done to date. And I FaceTimed my mom from the summit to, like, show her the sunrise, and she just, like, didn't pick up because she was asleep, so, like, we totally missed the moment.
She enjoyed the sunrise anyway, but the team couldn't stay long. As any climber will tell you, the summit is only halfway.
You know, it was like, what am I trying to prove right now? Like, I don't need to ski from the summit to say that I skied it. So we descended, like, 500 feet, turned the corner, and then skied from there.
Sunlight illuminated the slopes and turned the snow soft and edgeable. They skied corn-like snow down to base camp, legs shaking from thousands of feet of descending at altitude. There, they packed up and headed back to the hostel.
When we talk about very experienced technical things like ski mountaineering, there's, like, this guidebook for how to do things, right? Like, you have to bring these people, you have to do it in this certain way, it has to take this amount of time. Like, there's no room for anything else because it's a very serious thing. And it showed me that that's not true.
The team was exhausted, but they'd planned their trip to coincide with Dia de los Muertos, and they couldn't wait to celebrate.
Immediately got back down and drove to Puebla, which is a historical city, and spent the day there, like, just celebrating and watching the parades and everybody dressed up and, you know, eating all this beautiful, beautiful food. And it was this really cool way to, I think, like, honor that space and its culture. And cempasúchil is the name of this, like, bright orange flower that is typically used for Dia de los Muertos. And it's also this, like, very beautiful ancestral medicinal plant that is used. And people sort of drape the petals all the way from the cemeteries back to the homes to create pathways for the dead to come back and visit. And we were driving past fields of orange. It's cool to be in a place that is so deeply tied to the land and for its traditions to reflect that as well.
To cap off the trip, the team drove to Veracruz to soak their weary bodies in the ocean. From the highest point in Mexico to the sea, there was no better way to end their whirlwind of a trip.
Being an immigrant and existing in dualities, it feels like home is everywhere and nowhere at the same time, which is what draws me so much to the mountains, because I can feel the same feelings and have the same experience no matter where I am in the world if I'm on a mountain. And it really brings things together for me. But the most powerful ones are the ones that feel like home, literally, like in Mexico and Colombia. And so I think being able to be home in Mexico, but bring my athletic side, just feels like the right fit for me. You know, it just feels like things are coming together in the way that they should.
After a tearful goodbye, Vanessa flew back to Jackson, where winter was right around the corner.
I think for Black and Brown folks outdoors, we are just reconnecting with that inner child and finally giving them permission to play in the snow. And when I expand my goals to go outside of individualism, it's just a chain reaction of joy and healing that follows.
For Vanessa, chasing summits and individual accomplishments can feel hollow. And this trip to Pico de Orizaba cemented her belief that joy is more real when shared.
There actually is space for my culture, and there is space for all parts of me, including my family, in the sports that I love, if I create the space. And I think being able to set my own goals just makes all the difference, right? Because, like, my goal isn't to climb all the mountains, it's to bring people with me.
Thank you, Vanessa, for sharing your story. Our stories come from friends of friends, and from you, our community. If you have a compelling idea for a guest or a story lead, please give us a shout. You can use the submission form on our website, dirtbagdiaries.com. Music today from Kai Engel, Tigers in the Sky, Pace Face, Herman Sparks, JV in the Super Bolton, and David Swenson. The tracks are courtesy of the artists, Track Club, or Free Music Archive. Jacob Bain and Nice Cotto composed our theme song. You can find the links to the artists on our website. Check it out. This episode was produced by Lauren Delaney Miller with additional production help from Laura Izaza, Evan Phillips, and Becca Call. Illustration by Walker Call. Becca Call is our executive producer. I'm Fitz Call, and you've been listening to The Dirtbag Diaries. Thanks for tuning in.